Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Yuma Louise Roa, the CEO and founder of Pick a Talk, an innovative platform dedicated to empowering children with disabilities through accessible communication technology. A computer science graduate from Draper University and Draper University alumna, Yuma turned her college project into a thriving startup. With experience as a web developer, UX designer, and entrepreneur, she's presented Pick a Talk at numerous events, including Qubo's Top 100 Startups and Ideaspace Acceleration Program. Passionate about inclusivity, Yuma collaborates with speech-language pathologists and educators to ensure Pick a Talk makes a meaningful impact. Her mission is to bridge communication gaps, champion accessibility, and create a more compassionate, inclusive world. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story about launching and growing an app-based business in today's world. So, Yuma, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey Daryl, thank you so much
I'm
for having me. I'm doing well. How about you?
good, and I'm excited to have you here. I'm inspired by what you're doing. So let me get this straight. You've got a sister she's on the autistic spectrum. Is that what it is?
Yes. So I have my sister Leia was diagnosed with autism when she was 3 years old. So she has autism and speech apraxia. So speech apraxia makes it difficult for her to form words, like you know how you think of words and then try to articulate it. She has difficulty doing that.
And so you created basically a lot. I don't want to oversimplify, but just to explain what I understand, you created an app that allows her to quickly and easily pull up photos to speak in pictures, basically. Is that and communicate better? Is that part of it? Yes. Am I close?
Yes, so she actually inspired the application. So for years, we had difficulty understanding her because she couldn't verbally communicate with us. So she would mostly just point at objects or point in thin air and try to tell us something, but we just could not understand. And eventually, she learned how to use a computer. She understood how to use Google, and so she would search up images on Google and then drag us to the computer and show us these pictures. And we realized like that was like the easiest way for us to understand her. Like the
Yeah.
communication gap was just bridged because
Yeah.
of images. So
Images.
yeah, I came up with it. I decided to develop the app to make it easier for her so she doesn't have to go on Google all the time, so that all of her vocabulary is accessible in one application.
I love that. You know, sideline, this is so good. It even has applications across languages. I mean, we have Google Translate now, but I remember I taught English in Tokyo for a couple of years, and we would use Google Images because we'd say something, the student would be like, huh? And we'd look it up. And I remember once I had this student, and I was like, fuzzy. And they're like, what's fuzzy? And I'm like, fuzzy's kind of like hairy, but not hairy. It's soft and whatever. And I put it into Google, and they didn't have the safe search then. So I was like, fuzzy, whoa. And I had to slap the laptop to close real fast. I was like, I was like, that was fuzzy. That was definitely fuzzy. Anyways, moving on. But so it worked great in teaching language as well, using photos. I guess, as I say, a picture's worth a thousand words.
Yes, that's true.
So do you come from an entrepreneurial family? Are your parents entrepreneurs? Is that part of what inspired you, or is it,
Yeah, my parents are entrepreneurs. So my parents, they owned a cake shop here in Iligan City. So I really grew up being part of the family business. I started working as young as 10 years old in the shop.
Wow.
I would like watch the store. I would help sell these cakes. I actually learned how to bake because I wanted to take over the family business. But instead, I started my own tech company.
Right. And
Yeah.
that's a great thing. Software is super scalable. I mean, it's one of the best businesses to get into. How long, I guess, how old is the company now?
So we've been registered for 2 years. We'll be going on 3 years this year.
And you have a growing team. You're up to seven people now, eight people?
Eight people.
Eight people, right. Wow. So, what have been some of the biggest challenges for you so far?
Ooh, definitely big challenge. There were times where we almost broke up the team. because it's been year. So I started this back in college. So ever since starting it in college, it's been so difficult to, get revenue because our market is so niche. And also, the app wasn't very good at the time because we didn't have the money to hire people. We worked on our startup part time, so our progress was really slow. So, like, team morale was at an all-time low. And we just kind of thought that maybe it's time to pull the plug. But thankfully, we had a coach who told us that did who asked us if we actually did everything that we could, like if we really put out all of our energy. And we kind of realized that no, we didn't. We actually didn't know what we were doing half of the time. So he suggested that we would go for it for one more year with everything that we could. And if at the end of the year we still couldn't, if we still didn't have any milestones reached, then we can call it quits, no guilt free. But then we tried it for 1 year and we actually achieved all of the goals that we set out for
What?
that. Yeah. So we decided, okay, we're gonna keep going. Clearly, we're doing something good here. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that so much. I've got all sorts of questions for you. First, just having said that, what would you recommend to someone starting or struggling right now in their business? Do you have any tips, any advice?
Definitely one of the things that I've learned in my startup journey is failure is a part of it. Definitely. Because before I would really hate failing. I hated being a beginner.
Right.
So I would immediately quit if I'm not immediately good at something. But throughout this startup journey, I'm so amazed with myself that I was able to stick with Pickatalk for so long, despite all of the rejections, despite of all the failures. I'm still here, and I realized that throughout those failures, that's where I was able to learn more. So I think my suggestion for someone who is struggling, is just to, embrace failure and realize that you're just one step closer to success by failing. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. There's a great philosopher, Alan Watts, and he has this talk he gives called The Dream of Life. And he said, imagine just for a second that every night you went to sleep, that you could dream 100 years of life or however many years of life you wished. And in the beginning, when you went to sleep, you would dream every pleasure. You would have lives of obscene luxury and pleasure and whatever you wanted. And eventually you get bored. You want some excitement and some adventure and risk. And as time passed, you'd make further and further, like riskier gambles, until one night you go, tonight I want to go to sleep and dream, and I don't want to know I'm going to wake up and it's all going to be okay. And in the infinite possibility of the universe, you could have gone to sleep and be dreaming the life that you're dreaming right now. And without these challenges, without these obstacles to overcome, there's no, I mean, it's like a movie. It'd be a boring movie of just a movie of like everything's great, another beautiful sunny day. There's no challenge, there's no grit. So the problem is the solution. And
Yeah.
so I really like your perspective on that. How about when it comes to being an app-based business? I mean, there's so many people talking about no-code tools or low-code tools, and there's all these different tech stacks. I think for a lot of people, maybe for you, because you're fresh out of school and maybe, you grew up with it, maybe it's more savvy. For other people, what would you recommend? I mean, it seems for some people to be really complex, and you can spend a lot of time building something going the wrong direction, right? And then have to start over. So right now, any insights, any lessons you've learned that you'd perhaps like to share to someone else looking to start an app-based business?
I guess for us, it's really a advantage because my team, we're all classmates back in college, so we're all tech people. But the disadvantage that we had with that is that we had no one else for like the other aspects of a business. No one's in marketing, no one's in finances, and so on. So I had to wear all those different hats. So I guess similar for those people who don't have someone who is tech savvy in their team, I imagine it's probably difficult for someone who has a business background to try and learn how to code, just to create a product. So I guess my suggestion for that would be, as much as possible, make your team diverse, wherein, A lot of you can wear different hats at the same time. But of course, you can also make use of like low code, or if you're just at the prototyping stage, you can use Figma, or like you don't really necessarily have to code. You just have to really show that you have this idea, you have this prototype. And I think, I mean, like that's a good start for you, and I think you'd be able to attract the right people to join your team to help you out with building your idea. Because at first I did think that that if you have an app idea, you must have a working app. But then of all the competitions that I've joined, like some of them would just even draw it on a piece of paper. Like, this is my idea, this is what the interface is going to look like, and so on.
Right.
And you know, it's understandable already. So yeah, you don't have to worry about it so much being super duper functional in the beginning.
Yeah, I've heard that if you're not at least a little bit embarrassed when you first push it out there, you're waiting too long.
Yes.
You have to build it in public because you never know what people are gonna like. Put it in people's hands, let them click things and break stuff. You'll lose users, sure, but any business has to be able to onboard new users regularly anyway. So if your business is going to be turned upside down because you lost a couple users because the function didn't work properly or wasn't there, you don't have a business anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, I think
Yeah,
it's.
I've definitely felt embarrassed about our product in the beginning. Like, I remember when we just released it on production and I visited schools and had them try. I remember it not logging in or crashing just upon login. It's like, oh my God. And then I'm messaging the developers, guys, it's crashing. Guys, it's very buggy, and so on. So, yeah. It's all part of the journey, and at the time it was very embarrassing, but I'm so happy now to look back and see how much our app has grown. And now it's robust, it's stable. Yeah, no more embarrassments on that area.
But it's also what keeps your competitors out, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to be will yeah, it keeps the competitors out because other people aren't willing to do that. I learned a handstand walk. I met a goal that I wanted to learn a handstand walk. And I can handstand walk like 25 feet now. And I remember when I started, we were living in Vietnam at the time, and there was like a big pool area at the condo. And I would go to this one area, and the water was only sort of knee deep. And I would practice there because then if I fell over, I just landed in water. But I remember one day I felt really silly because I could, you know, I fell over a bunch of times and there's other people at the pool, you know, if, But now I can handstand walk like a boss and I don't even care anymore, you know, but there's a lot of people that wouldn't be willing to do that. And that's what really separates sort of the winners and the losers. It's always going to be hard before it's easy. Nobody ever got on a bike the first time and rode it. It was like, this is a piece of cake. Like you always have, it's always hard and then easy. So what are some of the skills or behaviors you think are important for entrepreneurs to develop going into the future as it is now?
Oh my God. I think I'm too young to answer this. I guess perseverance, of course, 'cause you know, it's not gonna be easy. It's not all rainbows and sunshines. There's definitely a lot of dark days, a lot of days where you will struggle. And those days are essential for you to grow and see which areas of your business isn't working out, and you know, make it better and improve. So definitely perseverance is one of the things that's definitely you would need as an attitude, or I'm not sure if it's a skill.
Well, it's a yeah, it's a behavior. It's I think it's
It's a
first.
behavior, yeah. Because I imagine I started this in college. I'm not a fresh grad, by the way. I graduated 6 years ago, so it's been a long time, 6, 7 years, of me working on Peratalk. And if I didn't have that perseverance, I would have quit a long time ago. I would have stopped. But yeah, I'm glad that I didn't. I'm so happy to see the impact that I've made in the lives of people that are just like my sister Leia, and even with my sister, just seeing how much she has improved over the years. It really keeps me going. And then I suppose something that I did learn, because before we would be so stressed out with like the revenue. We haven't generated any revenue. There's still no money and so on. I realized that the money shouldn't be the goal. I mean, like obviously it's a business. You're supposed to worry about the money part, but it shouldn't be the goal. Instead, it should be like the result of your product or of your business, not necessarily like the goal. So your goal should be to solve that problem that you are so that you are, you know, providing that solution for, because the money will come as long as you're like solving that problem. Obviously, people are gonna buy your product. Obviously, the money will come in. So just focus more and be more in love with your problem, and you know, just keep improving on your solution. I guess,
That is powerful. No, that's it. That's exactly it. You got it. Money can't be the goal. It's really just a way of keeping score. Everybody wants to make a ton of money and do nothing, but nobody wants to pay you to do nothing. And that's the catch 22. And so what you need to do is get good at building teams and delegating. And I have one mentor who said, delegate as much as you can so you're calling the shots, analyzing the stats, and copywriting. And what he meant by copywriting is you're communicating. You're copywriting to leads, you're copywriting, you're communicating to generate sales, to existing and past clients, to your staff, to your vendors, so that you're communicating and you're really focused on having the team grow and build the business and provide a solution. Greg Glassman, the founder of CrossFit, which was at one point the fastest growing fitness brand in the history of the world, and I think maybe even one of the fastest growing brands. His thing was markets are unknown and unknowable. If I ask you today how many people are in market to buy a car, you might be able to find keyword search data and whatever, right? But they're all estimates and the number is constantly fluctuating. So it's unknown and unknowable. But everyone can recognize excellence. So if your North Star is, as you said, being excellent at solving a problem, that will see you through good times and bad. And I think that's really, really powerful. I think that's really powerful to bring that up, because I think that there's too many people that get into a me too type business because they have bills to pay, and we can't get outside of ourselves and focus on the people that we're helping. And that's ultimately what separates capitalism, ideally, from socialism. In socialism, everybody shares what's made. But the problem with that is somebody has to be the accountant, and that accountant accumulates a massive stockpile inventory of what everyone's contributed. And corrupt people just, oh, well, one for you, 50 for me, one for you, 50 for me. So that's where communism doesn't work. And this whole master planner thing creates, somebody makes a decision that has to roll out across the whole country. And then in cases in history, millions, tens of millions of people would die. So master planning doesn't work. But when you empower people to make a decision for the best, most excellent solution for themselves and vote with their dollars, the cream rises to the top. It creates competition. So there's constant innovation, and localized solutions evolve and emerge in the areas that need them. So I think that's a great, great tip. I want to ask about your view of the future, though. I mean, obviously, you're building a software as a service product. So, what do you see as in the future? I mean, there's AI, like I mentioned, the low code tools, all these different stacks. Do you see things consolidating into one ideal tech stack? Do you see, if I know this is seen out of the future, but 5, 10 years from now, what do you think is going to be the toolkit for someone running a software, an app-based business?
Ooh, that is a very loaded question. I'm no longer as techie as I used to be. So, it's definitely more of AI. I mean, like when AI started, we kind of just made fun of it at first, especially like in the art industry. I'm an artist, so I've really seen how artists have made fun of AI in the beginning, because like the fingers, there are 10 fingers in one hand. The eyes, like you can tell if it's AI generate if it's an AI generated artwork, if it's an AI generated image. But it's so scary now how good AI has gone in just like a few years. So I can imagine like it's just gonna get, you know, AI is just gonna get smarter, and I think like it's gonna make tech companies' lives a lot easier. I haven't coded in years. I think in 2 years now. But I can see that it's very, very easier now to like search it up on ChatGPT, like how do I code this kind of feature or something like that. Because before I would have to go on Stack Overflow and then like just manually search it myself and like really hope someone else asked this question years ago in order for me to solve this problem that I'm solving. And now you can just easily search it up on AI. So that really like makes it a lot faster for developers to work nowadays. Yeah. So
So
I think that's like how it's gonna pan out in a few years. I think AI is just gonna get smarter and hopefully it's used in a way that assists humans instead of replacing all the different jobs that we have. Yeah.
yeah. Well, I'm not, I wouldn't be worried about it replacing jobs. There will be jobs that get replaced, but
Yeah.
Adam Smith in his famous book, The Wealth of Nations, talks about the diversification of labor. So there's a couple of points to this. But one of the things is in the example of the book he gives is if a single person were to make pins, just like a pin, like a sewing pin, they may be able to produce 10 to 40 of them a day. But a team of four people, each specialized on one role, they can produce over 10,000 per day. And it's because of the diversification of work allows specialization. And when there's specialization, people figure out how to do their piece better, faster, stronger. And they create specialized tools that enable exponential leverage. And when you've got a four-step process, if I improve each process 10%, that's not 40%, because it's not 10% plus 10%. It's exponential. A 10% improvement here allows 10% more throw. It's like a bottleneck theory. Right. If I have four-step process, if I improve step one by 10%, 10% more is getting to step two. And if I've improved step two 10%, it's an exponential. It's almost like a megaphone. And so through that, we've got this huge kind of like you hear the term economies of scale. So people have been saying robots are going to replace us since tractors came out to replace farmers. Oh, we don't need farmers anymore. And then we had calculators, and oh, we're not going to need bookkeepers and accountants anymore. And then we had spreadsheets and formulas, and oh, we're not going to need accountants anymore. And then QuickBooks. QuickBooks is going to replace entire, no one's going to need an accountant or a CPA. What happens is the productive people become more productive. The non-productive people lose their excuse for why it's taking them 3 days to do 2 plus 2 equals 4. And the people in the middle have to decide whether they're going to lean in or get retrained on a different skill. And ultimately, I think at the end of the day, that's kind of what we're going. But what I'm hearing from you is that it's lowering the barrier of entry. Because right now, there's a certain barrier of entry. If you want to run an app, you have to know how to operate a tech stack, how to code. You have to know the different languages. There's all sorts of use cases where you're going to have issues having to read through and find a bug because you left two periods instead of one. Like there's different. So many different things where now AI can just examine your code like that and help you streamline and improve things. So,
Yeah.
yeah, which is powerful. So it comes back to, and this is something you said, I'm just going to make you sound really smart here, is that the focus isn't necessarily going to be on the tech. It's going to be on the problem you're solving for people and solving it in the best way possible. And it sounds like what I love about your story is how organic. It was where you had someone in your day-to-day life that had a problem, and you put together a minimum viable product to solve that problem better. And over time, you've never left that. You've always been, how do I solve this problem better? And adding features, it's all about improving this user experience for them. And it's so user-centric that I think that that's incredibly powerful. I mean, Google's, a multi-billion dollar, maybe even a $1 trillion company. And as far as I know right now, they can't really compete with you because they have such a general purpose where you are so niched down. You talk about being niched, hyper niched. They say there are riches and niches, bitches. And I think that's, I think that despite the challenges it may pose, I think that's probably been unknown superpower that you have, because for a lot of business owners that I talk to, they're and even myself with my own project sometimes. The issue is a lack of a specific niche, which makes it hard for them to stand out when someone gives that message. When you're trying to advertise and try to convince them to work with you versus someone else. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
I just like to add that for me it was so difficult in the beginning to figure out how to improve the product because I do have my personal experience, but that also has a disadvantage. Because in the beginning, I tend to play to my biases. Like, oh, it works for Leia, it's gonna work with everyone else. It does not work that way. Because, especially not when it comes to the autism spectrum, there are no two cases that are alike. So when I started talking to teachers and parents, I was shocked to find out now, oh, this might not work for my kid because she's not techie. My kid might throw this across the room because, yeah. So a lot of the time, there were a lot of components that I didn't consider because I thought only of my sister. So it was very important for me to really start talking to other people outside of my family, people that I really didn't know their struggles to begin with, for me to better understand how to improve my product. Because yeah, it's very niche, but I also have to, cater to different scenarios as well, because no two cases are alike. So that was also very difficult in the beginning, but it's made easier when you talk to your customers.
Yeah, I love that. So you say it's been a couple of years since you were coding. So what is your focus these days? What are you focused on?
So for my startup, I am focused mostly on the business side. So I do all the networking. I talk with potential partners. I actually find for with impact partners, and we coordinate in conducting workshops, awareness programs about our interventions like our app. So it's called Augmentative and Alternative Communication. The reason why we do that here in the Philippines is because this is such a new intervention, especially the high tech kind. So we really need to teach or talk about it with families that are not aware that, oh, I can actually use this kind of communication for my kid, make it easier. Because for us personally in my family, Leia was 13 years old when we figured out that AAC existed, like this kind of intervention existed. It took us 13 years to figure that out. At that time, we actually thought, oh, Leia's autistic. This is going to be our life forever. She's going to throw temper tantrums. This is going to be our normal. And we didn't realize that there was a solution to our problem this whole time. And no one told us about it. So that's why we're doing these workshops. We're doing these awareness programs to, enlighten people that there is a solution to your problem. Like, they may be nonverbal, but it doesn't mean that they have nothing to say. It doesn't mean that they have nothing to, contribute. So by giving them this intervention, this type, this application, it gives them a voice where they can speak out and, live lives in the same way as the rest of the world does, be able to communicate.
Which is so powerful. It's so powerful. You just said there that you thought this was going to be the way it was going to be and throwing tantrums, but it doesn't have to be that way. Once you empower them, I want to say two things about this. There was a study done years ago on inmates in prison, and one of the things that they found is that compared to the national average, a lot of people in prison had a lower than average vocabulary. So there is a theory that are these people just unable to articulate and communicate, and therefore they're just resorting to actions, brute actions to get what they want because they can't involve in discourse. They can't work with other people because they can't communicate with other people as well. And so talking about you, like by enabling better community and ability to communicate, you're alleviating a lot of the crying, the pain, the frustration, the anger, and the lack of bonding between family members as well that happens as a result of that. And if for myself, I told you, for those that don't know, I just had another baby, and my wife and I were talking because I had met a girl when I was younger who had a baby. She taught sign language, and she said babies can actually learn sign language before they can learn to speak. And so we did that with our baby. And she would say like milk, water, thank you, nappy when she wanted her nappy change. And this was, she couldn't even speak yet, but she was able to communicate with us. And people used to always remark how little our baby cried. And I always thought it was because she was able to communicate and express her needs and wants. And so
That's so cool.
you triggered that when you was talking about how like the tantrum part. I was like, oh, our baby, because people will comment, like we'd be at a restaurant and something. And they'd be like, are you signing? Is your baby deaf? And we go, no, she's not deaf, but we just taught her like five things. And now, like for her, that's her whole world at this point, right? Like she's a baby. There's
It's
not really much beyond.
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, because sign language is actually an AAC. It's an augmentative and alternative communication because you're not using your voice to communicate. So it's amazing that you're using sign language. So same with sign language, it does come with training. So like you said, you had to teach your daughter or your baby how to sign in order to communicate. So much like other people who are deaf or mute, they don't immediately know how to sign. They have to go through school. So same with our app. It's not just because it's an app. It's like it's pictures. Like it's easy to understand. That also comes with a lot of training. That's why we involve the parents and the teachers as well on how to use the application so that they can teach the kids how to use it for communication instead for gaming, because that's a high possibility because it's on a smartphone. Yeah.
I think I love it. And I also think it's kind of funny because well, they say history repeats itself. So in Japan, I remember learning Japanese, and one of the best books that helped me with Japanese was pictograph, kanji, where they would take the kanji, they would make pictures out of it. And so you could see how the evolution, like a sun, you might draw as a circle, right, with some lines on the outside, but over time it becomes kind of a circle with a line through the middle, and then it's the shape it is now, which is sort of a rectangular shape with a line through a middle. And a moon is the same thing, but the bottom's opened and it's more of a crescent. And then it's like the Japanese kanji for tree looks like a stick drawn tree, and the Japanese kanji for forest is three of them in the same character space. And then there you have woman, which is like a little stick person, kind of, you look at it, and that's, and that's a woman. And then noisy is three women in the same character space. So it's just funny because you're communicating with pictures and images, and ultimately that's like, if you look at hieroglyphs, which are pictures which create sentences, and then we've got our emojis, which are symbols that we use in texting people, and now you've got your pick-a-talk, which is using pictures to talk. I'm like, maybe she's going to create her own alphabet at some point. So all right, I love this. I love what you're doing. I love how you're empowering people and how you're really rescuing families. Family is so important. I more as I get older, that's one thing I believe more and more, the importance of having tight-knit relationships with important people in your life. And I just think it's wonderful. I'm not here to just praise you and blow a bunch of hot air up your butt, but I think I have a lot of respect for, like you said, you've been in this for a lot longer than you've had the business registered. A lot of hard lessons learned. I think you deserve all the accolades that you're getting. I know that it's not all going to be sunshine and rainbows ahead, but I just think it's a great example of how to start a business that really solves a purpose. Serves a purpose, sorry, solves a real pain for people. And one thing you've done well is because it's an app, it's essentially infinitely scalable. I mean, there's whether it's like Gmail, there's 40 engineers and there's a billion people using Gmail every day. And so I just think it's a great example of a smart industry, smart niche, smart business model to pick up. And so what are your plans for the future? Do you have a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan?
So for this year, we're really focusing more on like the marketing side. So definitely we're looking into expanding even to the US market because we have seen that they are the ones who are more prepared to use this kind of application because they're already using these kinds of apps in the US. So we're planning on introducing it there. But yeah, still continuing here in the Philippines as well. There are a lot of overlooked communities here, especially those who cannot afford to get assistive technology. So here we're gonna be partnering with more organizations who would like to help out this community. And just educate more people about AACs and like the different ways that they can communicate to really empower more families, more children, because communication is essential to everyone. Like, could you imagine if none of us would be able to communicate? Like, that's just chaos. And for them, it's their everyday life. So, yeah, that's pretty much like a gist of our plans this year.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I love it. So if people want to learn more, go check out pickatalk.com, PIC-A-talk.com. talk, talk.com. You can Google it too. Pick, PIC, like picture, pickatalk.com. Check them out. If you know anyone that has a child on the autistic spectrum, tell them to check it out as well. If you're involved in any communities, partnerships, you can always email hq@pickatalk.com. Again, that's pick-a-talk.com. Uma, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Before we hop off, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I don't think so. I think you asked everything already.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I'd love to have you back at some point in the future and see how things are coming along. I wish you all nothing but a ton of success and prosperity, and just thank you for doing your part to help make this world a better place.
Thank you so much, Daryl. This was such a great talk. Thank you for the opportunity to share our story.